It's time for building the game with Jason and friends from Tabletop Game Design. It's at the end of the episode. That's
when it technically ends.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, April 29th, and you're listening to episode 622. As always, I am your host, Jason. Here today, I am joined by two other people. They are both awesome. The first one is co-host Emily Vincent, and the second is game designer Jonathan Schaffer. Hello, y'all.
Hello.
Hello.
So here we are. We're here.
Here we are.
Recording a podcast. It's exciting stuff. Yeah. Emily, you're never here.
I'm never here. It's been ages, ages and ages. You all have missed me.
John, you are not here as often. So, but it's always good to have you. You're always, I appreciated when we were talking about this topic, in the Discord, and you just started having opinions, and I messaged Emily and was like, well, I think Jonathan's our guy for this episode.
If you want opinions,
if you want highly specific opinions about things that we may or may not fully understand, call Jonathan Schaffer. He is on it. So. Awesome, awesome. Well, so how's everybody been doing lately?
Great. Yeah.
Emily's had a lot of free time.
Yeah, I've had a lot of free time. I've done a lot of game design, done some publishing stuff, probably not as much. So I'm feeling a lot of guilt. I'm feeling a lot of like productivity guilt and not getting enough done with my time every day and sort of moving the business part forward, in part because there's like a billion pieces, but in part because everything takes longer than I think it should take. So I'm keeping a little log of like what I accomplish each day, and it feels bad that that list is only like 4 bullet points long, where I look at them and I'm like, that seems like it shouldn't have taken that long, and I'm like, but that took 6 hours, right? And I don't know. Well, it's one bullet point, but it took 6 hours, right? So yesterday I digitized a game design that's sort of new, and I wanted to get it ready for Prototype Online, and it took me starting at like 1 p.m. through past dinner, right? I don't know. It just took me a long time, and I'm like, maybe this is just how long it always takes, but I never sit down and do it in one sitting. So that's where my head's at right now.
Have you considered that you worked in the corporate world for so long that you have bad feelings about how long things should take? And
yes.
Like that's probably the problem.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't accomplish 18 meetings yesterday. I only accomplished one digitized game design and 2 budgets. And so therefore, epic failure. Right. I mean.
Right.
At the end of the day, were you closer to your goal than you were at the beginning of the day?
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
So why we invite Jonathan. He's always got the wisdom. It's basically, you know, board game Yoda. So
also, I couldn't delegate this to anyone because I no longer have a team to delegate it to. So it turns out with just one person, you can only accomplish so many things.
Let me tell you what, is the hardest thing about leaving the corporate world, having had a team of people, is the ability to not delegate things, and not even just because you don't want to do them. It would be like if you had a person on your team who was really good at digitizing stuff, right?
Yes.
Then they would help you, like they would just do it for you because they're better at it than you are. And that's one of the things I always loved with my team was like, I'd be working on something and sometimes I would actually, no, I'm going to do this one. And they're like, oh gosh, can you just let me do it? Like, it's going to be so much better if I do it. And I'm like, are you sure that like, it's going to take you hours. It's going to take me minutes. Can you just please let me do it? And I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, like didn't even want to delegate it. And they're like, boss, you're bad at this. Like, I'm good at this. Let me do this. All right. If you really want to. So.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's what's going on with me.
Jonathan, you have a Kickstarter going. We should throw that out there because that'll be
smack in the middle of it right now.
Right. So it'll be close to done when we're done here. Right?
It'll be through this coming Friday when this.
Oh, so out. Okay. So it's still okay. Good. Because I know it's a short one. They did a little quick Kickstarter.
Yep.
Yeah. which got me nervous because I couldn't back it right away on my phone. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to get on this.
Yep. The game is Booba Kiki, which is a weird thing to say and have people try to type in B-O-U-B-A-K-I-K-I. And we talked about it on previous episodes when I was mm-hmm. back in the design phase of it. It's a party game about nonsense words and doodles and making associations as a cooperative game, and based on a psychology finding, and hoping that we get to a couple stretch goals where we're going to be able to add a couple more players to the player count and throw more cards in the game. And it's a scenario based game, like say The Crew. So we've got some possibilities of additional scenarios to throw in the box, and yeah, pretty exciting.
And it is ridiculously fun. And, you know, of course, based on a scientific concept, because you designed it.
based on a scientific concept, I haven't, you know, actually had any formal education in.
Yes.
Which is, that's the full sentence there. That's all you know it's from me.
What I like is you have the, I mean, other than that, I think that's funny, is that you have this way of being like, what's a scientific concept that's funny and weird, and how do I make a game out of that? And that is what I love about it, because it is the game is, you know, it's super fun, and I've played it a few times now, yeah, anytime I see it, I get excited. I'm really excited to finally have be able to get a copy of it to play it, because I know my family will love it. I do the board game club at the school. I know they'll love it because they love party games, and this one is a party game where they get to say silly words, and you even snuck in, hopefully they're still there, you snuck in words like thwip and stuff like that, like the Spider-Man sound, and yeah.
There are a couple little Easter eggs, yes.
Yeah. I won't spoil them all. There are others I've seen, but that is my favorite one. When I saw that, I was like, ah, ha, ha. So yeah, yes. But yeah, check that out, y'all, and yeah. Well, I suppose we should talk about the topic here. So a few episodes back, I don't remember which one.
Previously on Building the Game.
Exactly. <right? laughs> So, you know, they used to be like on the last episode of, but now it's previously on, because they want to, you know, mine stuff from several episodes. It's not like on the last episode of The Dukes of Hazzard, the boys were getting away from Boss Hogg, and, you know, like, so BTG does not endorse that show. But anyways, so yeah, Emily and I, you and I were talking about games, and I don't remember how it came up, but we started talking about Euros and realized we could not define what a Euro was to save our life. Yeah. It was quite bad.
We also had some great, I think I called Brussels a country and it's a city. And
well, and I called it Bruxelles, so that wasn't great either. It's
French. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a whole lot of discovery during that episode. But yeah. We don't know what a Euro game is.
I mean, so here's the thing. Like, my current definition of a Euro, I was thinking about this, is like the Supreme Court's definition of pornography. Like, I can't describe it, but I know it when I see it, right? Like, is that was
absolutely.
It?
Yeah.
Potter Stewart.
Is that, yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah,
Supreme Court. Yeah. Yep.
So, John, you should probably make a game called You'll Know It When You See It, and then just like, not about porn.
Sounds dangerous. Yeah.
But it's in a completely black box with nothing else on it. So you have no idea what's in it.
Or it could be shipped to you in a plain brown wrapper.
There you go. Or why not and?
Yeah, yes, you're right. But so,
Yeah, so
that was how,
came up.
Right.
And I, you're completely right. That was actually a phrase I had written down in my notes.
I always feel smart when that happens. It's not very often.
And so people started talking about what that meant in the Discord, and I think it's quite complicated. And I think in order to have that conversation be meaningful, there's some stuff that that is worth talking about in language and definitions in general first, because I think I feel like it is a bit of a minefield for a few reasons when you try to apply definitions to categories of things. So I love thinking about language. I am not an expert in this field, but it's a hobby of, you know, I listen to a lot of great language podcasts and make wordplay based games and all this stuff. So love it. But I'm sure there are people out there who are going to correct me on some stuff. So that said, the pitfalls that I think we need to be aware of when having any conversation around definitions are just some things about language in a field like this. We have these terms that we use that are, whether they're meaningful at all is something we should talk about too, but they're only meaningful within this group of people. So there is an inherent risk of it adding to gatekeeperiness whenever you start collecting terms. And it can also lead to a lot of kind of mansplaining behavior or condescension when you're, by correcting people, or it can be exclusionary. It can also be fun slang. So, slang is a tribalistic language like that is that way for a reason. Like, people want to have words that define them as being part of a group. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's something I think we need to be aware of when we start having conversations, especially if around whether something is a correct, when we use the word correct, that's a dangerous word. So I'll often hear, you know, is that a real word? Well, a real word or language is whenever you can say something to someone and they understand what you mean. Yes, you're communicating. That's language. It does, so there's no, there's such a thing as formal language or standard language, but that doesn't make it more correct.
Mm-hmm. Right. Have you, Jonathan, have you watched Abraham Piper on Instagram? Or, okay, dude, you would be this guy's best friend. You got to look him up. Abraham Piper. I literally was like, did you get this from him? You would love him. He's hilarious.
That guy with the long hair.
Yeah. And he talks, he was explaining where hashtag came from. And like, it's amazing. Oh, yeah. It's amazing. I was like,
that's a peeve for me because people call the actual pound sign the hashtag.
No, yeah. When it's a pound sign because it was LB written in cursive for pound. And then it slowly degenerated into the pound sign.
I missed that lecture. Holy cow.
Yeah, all it's right. Real good. Yeah. He's one so excited about it, too.
For that one, too, octothorpe is a fantastic word for another word for that symbol.
For that symbol? For the tic-tac-toe symbol? Okay.
Yeah, because it's got eight little things coming off of it. It's an octothorpe. Okay.
Every time I have you on the show, Jonathan, I'm just reminded of how much smarter than me you are. Hey. And I love it.
Filled with dumb facts is not the same thing as smart.
Your dumb facts are always like my dumb facts are like weird stuff. Your dumb facts are like definitions of things and names for things that like make you sound real smart. So that's all. All right. Sorry. Keep going. But you really should look up Abraham Piper.
That's great.
You'll waste your whole day. It's great.
Excellent. So yes, that was kind of a warning that came in through my head because we're talking about that. So I kind of want that to be in the background. And then I was thinking when listening to last week's episode, when you're talking to Jamie and Roscoe, and there were a couple terms that came up in that one that you had to define. And I thought it was interesting that those went a couple different ways. First one that came up was Yomi, which Jamie did a fantastic job of giving a definition for that. But it's one of these words that it can be really useful, but it's not a word that people are going to know. And in fact, in the Discord talking about that, there were a couple other terms thrown up for that exact same concept. And so if we're talking about, you know, analyzing something and we need a word for it, it's a great word. If you just want to describe something to someone and you don't know if they are familiar with it, it's probably not a great term to use for that.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other one that came up was zero sum, which I think kind of went the opposite direction. Like everyone had a good intuitive idea of what you were talking about, kind of, but I don't think anyone got the technical definition, because it has a technical definition in a scientific field, but it was useful to you because you all kind of vaguely were in the same neighborhood of what you were talking about, even if it wasn't
in a game. We understood, right? Because in the context of a game, it's I gain from your loss and vice versa. That's really all you need to know for a board game, right? I mean, in my opinion, is that.
Oh, I thought it had more to do with being a closed system.
That's closer. Yeah.
Okay.
To the game theory definition. But again, like that doesn't mean the other is wrong, because you all were talking about it and you had the same meaning in your head.
Right.
And that's the important bit.
Yeah. We all know it when we see it.
Exactly. you know, it's like, and I think this gets trickier even when we're starting to get to what we're talking about of what's a euro. Whenever the definition is of a category of things, I think it gets even harder, because there's always fuzzy edges on a category. Like, what's a tomato? Yeah. Is a tomato a fruit or a vegetable? Well, the answer is yes, because
right.
Are you a botanist or are you a chef?
Have you heard the explanation of the Dungeons and Dragons stats via a tomato?
No.
This is great. This is like the best way to explain D&D stats, by using a tomato. So strength is how easily you can smash a tomato. Dexterity is how accurately you can throw a tomato. Constitution is how well you handle eating a rotten tomato. Intelligence is knowing that a tomato is a fruit, not a vegetable. Wisdom is not putting a tomato in a fruit salad. And charisma is the ability to sell a tomato-based fruit salad. And it's like, it is. I mean, like, it's perfection, right? Like, I mean, it just covers it so well. The tomato is amazing. Somebody was like, you could do that with a potato too. And I was like, false. Like, it's not as funny if you do it with a potato.
Smashing a potato is much harder and doesn't give you the same visual imagery unless it's already cooked, and then you've got a whole other situation.
It does hurt more. Smashing a boiled potato. It does hurt more if you hit someone with it when you throw it, though.
Yeah.
So categories, hard.
Yeah, if I could just jump in, the thing that brings to mind is... I'm going to go all corporate here, but anytime you're trying to organize like a group of people, you want to put them into like manageable sized groups, right? Of like, you don't want 25 people in this group and like 2 people in this other one. And so like, then people start trying to sort themselves by skills and expertise and stuff like that. And it never works. It never works, right? Because people and many things are multifaceted. Right. And so I've always talked about trying to group in this way, kind of like atoms. So you've got like a nucleus where like there's a core there, and then there's electrons of people are just sort of like fuzzily orbiting it. And you may live in that space between 2 atoms, and you just at some point you'll pick which one you identify with and just go with it. But you're really in both. Right. And you live in that like, I could be in any one of these things. I'm just like a free floating electron sort of in between. Right. And so I feel like, I don't know, to me, when I think about categorization, I think that's all those fuzzy edges where you're like, well, this could be a Euro or this type of game or something like that. And you're like, why not both, right? I don't know.
But that's not to say that it's impossible to categorize those things, because you got that fuzzy mass of stuff, there's still kind of a center of mass, right? So
yes,
you can kind of have a good sense of putting things roughly into categories, even if you can't do it precisely.
Right. I think that that's where the gatekeepery stuff comes in, though, right? Is when you're like, no, this is this category. It's usually more when it's exclusionary, right? Like, I see this a lot with, like, trick takers did this a lot. I got a lot of flack for calling games trick takers back in the day, and people were like, that's not a trick taker. And I was like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but also maybe, you know, maybe the definition is broader than you think it is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was probably wrong, but, like,
I think, and I think, again, it's probably both of those things. So
there's
a definition to what a trick taker is. There's also connotations of the word trick taker that are not part of the definition. Like, and then there are things that will break the rules of the definition you make, but everyone would say, yeah, that's still a trick taker.
Right. And there's negative connotations to trick takers. I mean, like, when Green Couch published Into the Black Forest, which is a trick taker, Katarsky did not market it as a trick taker. I was like, well, it's a trick taker. He's like, it's a new classic card game. Trick-taking aspects to it, because that sells better than using the word trick-taker, because when you say it's a trick-taker, some people just write it off automatically. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, that's fair. I mean, that is one of the reasons why we categorize things, right? When you say Euro, I generally think, nah, pass. Like, I don't want to play that. Like, so, which is wrong sometimes. Some of my favorite games have a lot of Euro aspects in them. So, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, based on my definition.
I mean, even if you take something simple like Roll and Write, you know, everyone knows what a Roll and Write is, or do they? Like, I would say that a game can be a Roll and Write, and it doesn't have to involve rolling, and it doesn't have to involve writing.
Right.
It's probably better if it involves at least one of those things, but I'm definitely going to call a lot of things. I don't see the need to invent new categories of flip and right. It's a roll and right. We know it's a roll and right.
Right. I think that's where one of the issues is. A game comes out that defies previously created categories, right? Like the first roll and right comes out and people are like, whoa, what are you doing with this? Like, well, you roll dice and you write. Let's call it a roll and right. But then the next game's like, well, what if I don't use dice? Why don't I just use cards? Well, this is a flip and write. Like, really, they're random and writes, right? I mean, that is like, it is a random thing and you write. Like, that is kind of what most of them are. But we come up with these specific terms and then we are like, whoa, no. I mean, like a lot of sports teams terms, right? We come up with these terms and we're like, well, we're not changing that now. That's what it is. Like, we can't possibly change that and call it something different because that would be too difficult. We already made t-shirts. So we have a BGG category. What are we going to do?
Yeah. And so I think on to Euro, the word Euro, I think is probably the worst offender in almost every single way that we have discussed, both in terms of how fuzzy it is, in terms of different people having different interpretations of it, in terms of the gatekeeperiness, in terms of like all of these ways. I think in a lot of ways for me, it's what we would call a skunked word. It's a word like bi-weekly or whatever, where it's not very useful anymore because
I hate bi-weekly.
Yeah, you just shouldn't use it because you can't know that the person you're talking to is going to have the same meaning as you do. If you have to define it every time, what's the point in the word? So a little bit I feel that's where we are with Euro, but I think it's still worth talking about because it's a word that's used so much. I prepared a bit by glancing at Wikipedia for Eurogame, and it was really interesting to see what it said, because what it said was mostly what I think of as the old meaning of Eurogame.
Yeah, Yep.
Right. The yep. early 2000s, late 90s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like some of these, here are some aspects that it says are part of a Euro game. No player elimination.
Yeah.
That's for the best because those games are long.
Well, no, but see, like, is that a Euro game to you? That's a game to me.
I think that's a, yeah. that feels like it's just a thing that's fallen out of favor. Uh-huh. Yeah,
exactly.
As you get older. Right?
People realize it's more fun to actually play the game
right.
than it is to watch other people play the game.
The game designer is listed on the box as an author. Yeah. That's a game,
that doesn't
right?
feel like a Euro thing.
And that's not, I mean, like, that is not, a lot of Euros don't have that anymore if they're not a super famous name.
A limited amount of luck, meaning, which I interpreted on the article as meaning output randomness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. no, or limited direct conflict. I think that one's the one that's probably the most has stuck around the most is associated with the term maybe. But a lot of these things were here. Euro games were as distinct from American style hobby games, which were war games or mass market games. Yeah. Ameritrash or mass market games at the time in the 90s.
Right. So you're talking Monopoly, Sorry.
Yeah.
And then war games.
And then war games with miniatures games.
Yeah.
All the stuff from Avalon Hill.
But Jonathan, I'm curious though, like when you look it up, one of the first Euro games, it'll say like one of the first and most popular is Catan, which defies all but player elimination on the things you just described. You roll dice, it's so random. There is lots of direct conflict, you know, that's where you get trading in the Mediterranean, like as a term, right? Like,
yes.
Well, so can we talk about direct conflict for a second? Because I don't think I know. Let's go down the definition rabbit hole.
Yeah, excellent.
Welcome to building the definition.
Because I don't think I know what that means, right? I assume just from that context that they mean there is not direct attacking of each other, but to me
conflict
for a resource feels like direct conflict, right? In Catan you're going for the same space on the hex, right? So is that direct conflict? I don't attack you to do it, I do it on my turn and I get there first and we never actually interact, but it's like a race, right?
I always think of it as, and Jonathan correct me if I'm completely off base, but to me direct conflict is, can I do actions that will reduce your ability to do things? Like, can I make choices that will have a direct impact on what you want to do and stop you from doing that? That's I see direct conflict.
Like all this stuff, it's going to be fuzzy again, but I think that that fits for me. Like, I would think of chess is a very direct, it's not a war game, but it's a very direct conflict game. I take your piece, you no longer have your piece. A worker placement game is definitely indirect conflict. I do a thing that may impact you negatively. I'm not, but back to our friend, this is the intuitive definition of zero sum again. This action isn't necessarily zero sum, even if the game is. In that the thing that I do helps me and the amount it hurts you might be different or none.
So is there a distinction then, because I heard you say direct and indirect, where direct is like I take something from you and indirect is I prevent you from doing a thing, like I get in your way, right? Because Catan is I prevent you, right? It's
there's also the robber though, which is direct, where I'm,
which is like, direct, you're right,
I'm
I
stealing from
robber.
You yeah. I'm choosing to steal from you and then block you from getting more things.
Yeah.
Yes.
That literally insult
more direct. Yep.
Yes. Yeah, I think maybe I just go to whether it's direct or indirect, the conflict piece is the one that, you know,
worker placement though, Jonathan, I'm confused. Like when I, so Stone Age to me is a Euro worker placement game, right? And when I take something so that you can't place there, like, that directly impacts you. It's not like I build a thing and it changes something that has an indirect negative effect on you. That feels direct to me.
Oh, and these are, again, really fuzzy. So that on the spectrum of conflict, yeah, those are less direct than a combat scenario, than taking your territory and risk. Certainly, like obviously less direct than that, but more direct conflict than we are playing. Well, let's go back to most Roland rights, where there is, people will say no player interaction or very little player interaction. Right.
Multiplayer solitaire, right?
Yeah, that's the often pejorative term there, right? Even if there is some interaction, it tends to be, or like we're drafting stuff out of a pool.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's so. Interaction. Is it direct conflict? Less so.
So
you're more likely to do something because it benefits you than because it hurts someone else.
But can I murky the waters a bit more though and say that to me there's intention there that can be, so for instance, mm-hmm. when my wife and I play Splendor,
yes.
if we're both going for the same card because it fits what we're going for, or Splendor Duel, you know, we both want to grab the same resource chain, and I take it because I need it and she needs it. That to me is I've indirectly hurt her, right? Because I need it too. But when I spite draft, that to me feels like shots across the bow, direct conflict because of my intention. So I think that obviously, like, you know, that's not a good description of saying like, well, it's indirect if you're doing it to help yourself and it's direct if you're doing it to screw the other player. But in my mind, those are very different things, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, the player brings, it's not all baked into the game design. I think I agree with that.
Yeah, I still think that for me, there's some distinction that I felt like, you know, Catan and games of that era introduced to me, which is more of the less take that and more get in their way, right? Of I've by doing what I want to do, whether it's for spiteful reasons or not, I've blocked you from accomplishing your plan by taking the thing you wanted out of the draft or completing the recipe first or, you know, whatever it is, taking your spot on the hex. And so your plan has to change, which just, you know, I feel like that when they're talking about that no direct conflict, it's more no take that. No direct, like, I stole this thing out of your hand, you built a thing, and then I took it away.
Yep, very much so.
That's a good,
Because, like, the interactions can also be positive, where you're, even if in a game with, where you're directly competing with people, there can only be one winner. The interactions look like, I think it's an underused game design space of doing things that help other people too when you're in competition with them. Mm-hmm. Was just playing Cartagena last week, which is you know, basically a gamer's candy land. It's an awesome game. But in the original version of that one, you can move forward by playing cards or you can move backward to gain cards. And in the second, there was a sequel game that is now an optional rule in the newer editions that we were playing with, which I like better in a lot of ways, which is you can move forward by playing cards or you can get cards by moving someone else forward.
Ooh.
And so simplifying things into interaction is conflict isn't correct either. There's just a lot of nuance here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nuance is the worst.
So no, I think not. Those I'm things, kidding. So many of those things have become baked in as just what we think of as modern games. And there's so much bleed over between these. But I think we can talk about what people tend to mean these days when they say something is a euro, because a lot of those things aren't useful anymore. So they're focusing on some aspects that are, that were just a tiny subset of the games that were called euro before. And I think you covered some of them. You said a dry theme, certainly.
Boring AF.
Funny, right? Well, and that, I mean, that's partly where I've been coming from as a designer, right? But I don't feel like you see as much, or you didn't see as much, like, fun, funny, hilarious, you know, theme. They're serious. They're serious games, right?
Yeah, and it's so interesting because, like, I agree with that, but when I was playing games in the early 2000 era, Eurogame specifically made me think silly themes. Like, it was exactly the opposite. Like, games like Bonanza. We're playing games with anthropomorphic beans and we're planting them in fields. What the hell is going on here? This is not the Risk that I knew or whatever. So it's actually completely flipped.
Yeah, I think we played different Euro games. Because I was off playing Catan and Puerto Rico and a little bit of Carcassonne, right? So,
I mean, even Carcassonne, like, didn't take long before they had the catapult expansion. So, like, wackiness was not foreign to even that, right?
Yeah.
I finally played Carcassonne for the first time, like, a couple months back, like, ever. Even though I've owned it for like 10 years. That's just me. But I was surprised at how bad the art is for trying to figure out how you're scoring with a 10-year-old cop. I was like the 20th anniversary edition or something. It was awful. I'm like, did that score? Like, is that, what is this? Oh my gosh.
The industry has made great strides in graphic design over the past 20 years.
It's like, wowza.
Yeah. So, but this actually sort of brings me to a thing that I found when I was trying to research for this. So one of the things I found a bunch of articles saying was that Euro games are in general family friendly and play in 60 minutes or less.
And that, this is exactly what I was saying. I think that is 100% true in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
that was the distinguishing factor. Their family weight and they're shorter than Monopoly or Risk or whatever.
What happened?
And that word has it means the opposite of most of those things today.
Right. Can you imagine playing Brass Birmingham with, like, your family? Be like, we're going to sit down for a breezy game of Brass Birmingham.
You will have some people say heavy Euro.
Right.
And I think when people say Euro, they now are using that as shorthand for heavy Euro. They mean an economic game. They mean a dry theme. They mean you're changing things into other things. Mm-hmm. They mean
you're
going to score at the end with victory points.
Yes.
Victory points is an interesting one. Yeah. Like, as opposed to a race to a certain goal or someone losing all their hit points or whatever.
Yeah, and that feels pervasive in a lot of stuff. And I feel like I've definitely heard, you know, podcasts and read articles about, like, death to victory points and stuff like that.
For sure.
Because it's such a crutch. You're like, how are you going to win? You'll have the most points.
Well, we're not going to call them victory points. We're going to call them something thematic points.
Right. I feel adjective like Zoe would have thoughts on this.
Yeah. And there's a lot, I mean, there are a lot of, again, language is hard. There are ways you can make equivalent concepts. You can think about things in different ways. There are a lot of things that you could express as victory points or express in a different way. So, for example, let's say we're racing down to the end of a track. Well, if every step along that track is 1 point, now it's just victory points. So like, how are you expressing it, and what does that do to the psychology of the players? It's the same thing as this, whether something's a Euro or not, you could redefine things and try to cast something as a Euro or not. And the difference is going to be how it makes people feel about it.
Want to design a game with all these disjointed terms. Like, it's a racing game where you get victory points, but really it's just getting to the end of the thing. Like, I love that. Like, that needs to happen. It confuses people, so that's probably bad, but.
Yeah, this is back to a episode we did a couple years back, maybe, Jason, about isomorphisms and about how.
In the hotel where you made me play tic-tac-toe as a trick. Because it wasn't tic-tac-toe, but it was. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I was literally just thinking about that when you were saying that.
Exactly. Like worker placement. Everyone kind of knows. Again, you know it when you see it. You know what worker placement is. But you also know what action selection is. And those are really basically the same thing.
Yes.
That you're, you know, expressing different ways.
Mm-hmm. And apparently victory points in racing are the exact same thing.
Sure. So. Can be. Yeah. Yeah, so what is there to... So, Emily, you had some questions. Maybe we should start there.
Oh, yeah, well, all right. So, we talked about length, right? Which I think, you know, again, our point was that they used to be shorter, but now I think Euros are long, right? And I think your point about Euros versus heavy Euros, that we're kind of using those terms synonymously now, was an interesting one.
I don't think many people would bristle at the idea of a... lighter weight Euro game, but I think if you say Euro and you don't qualify it, the assumption is heavier now.
That is the difference now. I was going to say that, John, too, that like it goes from, it used to be it's a Euro, it's a heavy Euro. Now it's a Euro or it's a light Euro.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about theme and that in general, it's meaning a sort of a drier theme. I'm curious your thoughts about components. Are there components? Jason said something.
Yeah.
Something about cubes.
Cubes. Yes. So that's a historical thing, I'm sure, too, from just what things were affordable to produce. But that's certainly an association people have.
Yeah. And I, you know, so the funny thing for me is like when I started working on game design, the first thing I did was buy a bunch of cubes. Right. And then a couple playtests in realized, wow, this is really not colorblind friendly. Like there's no way to make a game involving lots of different colored cubes that works. You have to get cylinders and not cubes and a bunch of other stuff. Right. And I was like, huh, but I definitely used to play games with just, I mean, Pandemic, right? It's just cubes, different color cubes, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I do think like wooden pieces, to me, that felt very Euro in the, you know, because I was used to plastic pieces from Monopoly and Risk and wherever. Uh-huh. And now I was like, ooh, wooden people or wooden pieces. That's so fancy, right?
Yes.
I think that, you know, you have to remember that back in the day, we just didn't care about people with disabilities playing games. I mean, it sounds like a joke, but it's not. No. I mean, like when I started designing, you know, in 2012, colorblind was not something that we talked about. Like it just wasn't. And then, you know, I met Eric Handler, who's a colorblind gamer. And that to me was like, I mean, I know it's like the stupid story of like, well, I met someone with a disability and then but I mean, that's what happened. I mean, it, you know, him being like, oh, I can't tell the differences in these colors, like, oh, well, that's an easy fix. Like, just get this chart and then pay attention to this, right? Or, you know, try to have more than one defining characteristic. But like, it just, that stuff just wasn't something people thought about, which is not good, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's
progress.
It's true to an extent, but it's also, that's not the only factor. I think some things have to do with the success of the hobby, making it financially feasible to invest in more than one shape of resource so it can be more colorblind friendly. and a similarly
right. screen
pleasing.
Printing an icon on something as well yeah. as
there's yeah. certainly been some technology that's changed. But also, yeah. I mean, the culture has just changed around that, right? That
yes,
it's not acceptable
yeah.
to just be like, well, I guess you can't play. Sorry about your luck, you know? I mean, like, yep. Cues and Cues, from what I've heard from colorblind people, is incredibly colorblind friendly, which is ridiculous because it's literally a game about, like, subtle yeah. colors. But I've talked to more than one colorblind person who said, oh, gosh, that game is so easy to play when you're colorblind. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense. I mean, it kind of does make sense, right? Because, like, they see the world in a specific color and once, or sets of colors, right? And once you're sort of honed in on that part of the board, like, it's a, you know, it's more of this or less of that. But, yeah,
yep.
you're not trying to make the big jumps between groupings. You're making the subtle jumps in between, right? So
one other thing that we didn't cover on my list, I realize, as I'm thinking about cubes, I thought about the term cube pusher and what that means. And it's not just the cubes themselves, but also a phrase that we haven't used yet, engine building, I think is emblematic of Euros, where you get to acquire things or set up things that then passively produce things for you.
Yeah.
Or convert things, or you like set the thing up and then cubes. You see it run.
Yep.
That's very Euro-y. So
that was going to be my other question. What are the core mechanics that you see in a lot of Euros? For me, the one that I felt like got introduced was drafting, right? I felt like I didn't really see drafting from a market before I started seeing it in Euros.
I would guess, I don't know this for a fact, that drafting really entered the hobby consciousness through Magic rather than probably it's a Magic the Gathering thing, because that's part of what some of the I'm not a Magic player, but that's one of the primary formats that people play, is that they'll every person is going to open a booster, take some cards, pass them, you know, do what we think of as a circle draft in drafting games today. I think my understanding is that was probably the heaviest association people had before games like Seven Wonders, Sushi Go type games came around and brought that in as, like, this is the mechanism of the game.
Right. And I think having the drafting as a part of the game, or even then, so like action selection. Yeah, so it's action like worker placement, action selection, engine building, and then something about the draft. Because I feel like, and maybe I'm just thinking of the market from Puerto Rico, but I feel like there was a whole bunch of stuff in Puerto Rico that I hadn't seen before, of this like competing for, you know, I'm going to get this building before you and it's going to be my end game scoring. Oh yeah, my end game scoring multipliers, right? Like giving you a sort of a larger objective to work for, of like its number of buildings or its number of fields. I think they might be plantations in that game. Number of workers who definitely
Stone
not
Age
enslaved people. Yeah.
Lots of arithmetic with lots of arithmetic with very small numbers.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, and arithmetic, like, for sure, not math. Like, in a Euro, it is arithmetic, for sure.
Like, how is this different from Monopoly? Contrasting this with Monopoly, you've got a lot of arithmetic with big numbers and percentages, and it's a financial system that is attempting to be realistic. And there's layers of abstraction in a typical Euro where, okay, so now every building costs $1 or whatever, you know, just to make, we're going to make everything easy to calculate, but we're going to do a lot of calculation with that.
Yeah.
The end game scoring thing is an interesting thing. Like, when I think of a game like Stone Age, where the first time you play Stone Age with someone and they're winning and they're like, oh man, I'm doing really good. And I'm like, no, you're not though. Like, you just think you are. And then, like, over half the score from your game is, like, endgame scoring. That was one of the first games that taught me about, like, obfuscating the score and who's winning in an interesting way. Yeah, that just made me think of that.
a lot of these to me are feeling like things that I just sort of see in hobby games. And I wonder if like the Euro exactly. game of the late 90s is really now the hobby game and the heavy Euro is something else, right?
That is, I think that's spot on. And however, there's a lot of in hobby game, like I would say the DNA of a typical hobby game is more Euro than not, more 90s Euro than not.
Yeah.
But there's been plenty of cross-pollination from what would traditionally be not that. So you do see a lot more of the fantasy themes and the, you know, all those other things we talked about mixing in together to the point where, as I said, I'm not sure it's a very useful term right. to volunteer, but it's important to understand from the perspective of knowing what other people are talking about, even if I would prefer not to try to define things that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So can I ask I'm going to throw a little tiny grenade in here. So what is the difference then between a Euro and a 4X game?
Oh, I could define a 4X game, I think. I don't play 4X games because they have a tendency to be longer. I don't think those are different buckets. I think 4X games could be considered Euros in many cases. But the X's are, let's see if I can get this right. Explore, expand, exploit, and
exterminate,
extinguish, something like that.
It's a violent term, whatever.
Violent one, yeah. Yes.
And so, violence.
Yeah, so big on I envision, when I hear that term, I imagine a map that starts small and you grow out. Either you're all in the same place and you're reaching out, or you're starting in different places and seeing revealing things. Yeah, so that feels a little bit more likely to have the more direct conflict. They're certainly still likely to have some of the economic stuff we were talking about in a Euro. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally did not know that those 4Xs had words associated with them until Zoe posted its talk in the Discord like 3 days ago. And so I think I was explaining to Eric like a year and a half ago. I was like, yeah, yeah. And then there's 4X games. And he was like, what's a 4X game? And I was like, oh, it's just like, it's so heavy and long that like, it's not like 1X. It's not like 2X. Like I was thinking it's like XL. I was like, it's 4X.
Nice.
It's like the worst. It's like 8 hours of crunchy conflict and you're in it.
Interestingly, you're okay. Wrong, but you're also not wrong. That's
exactly,
the thing.
Yes. Like, and that's a 14 less than an 18XX game.
Right. Right.
So 18XX games being a type of train game. And
oh, which means,
train games?
Because it means 1800 and yes. XX. Because some of there were some games, right?
Yeah, that was like 1842 or whatever.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, yeah. It's like
I just assumed they were all trading in the Mediterranean, but 18XX would, yeah, that makes sense that they're trains. Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, I love how wrong you are, but also how it makes so much sense. Like, it just makes sense. It's completely understandable why you thought those things.
So train games are a genre I won't touch with a 10-foot pole.
No.
And which is another thing. Where,
that's the only train game I know.
Well, that's exactly the example I was going to give you. Ticket to Ride, I will say, is not a train game.
Not a train game. Yeah. I've heard that a lot.
I found it in a list of Euros. I've got my little list of Euros over here, and they're like, Ticket to Ride.
Ticket
classic
to Ride.
Euro.
Is a classic Euro, 100%. But it is not what people mean when they say a train game, because when they say a train game, they mean the game about the stock market. Of course.
What? Okay, well, this explains why I don't like train games, because I hate market games. Like, stock markets are... I'm terrible at them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, wow. Train games tend to be heavily economic games where you're getting shares in train companies. And there is a building rails across a map aspect to them. But the reason I bounce off them hard is that they're long and really tight economic systems. And you have to value things. And I'm just bad at that. And yeah.
I am just saying, Eric and I would play this and he would kick my butt at it and I would be so mad the entire time. I'd be like, I'm not having fun with this game.
But yes, Ticket to Ride, I would say is exemplifies what I think of as a Euro game, but what no one would think of as a Euro game today.
So I'm going to throw out, because I know we're coming up on time here, but I found one other game on this list of Euro games that I wanted to throw out there. Dixit.
Okay, yeah.
Dixit is considered a Euro game?
Well,
on some list that I found on the internet. So
yeah, Dixit is the game with the pictures where you have to... Yeah.
Yeah. It,
by our earlier definitions, by those 90s definitions, absolutely. It's got a named designer. It's got no player elimination. Luck doesn't really have a factor in it. It's not a direct conflict kind of thing. It's got victory points. You're doing it at the end. Like, it's a family weight game. It's low, but today I'd call that a party game.
I think it's a party game, right? A fancy one, right?
Uh-huh. Indeed.
It's got art instead of just words.
Yep.
But
yeah, so that's just goes to show these words are useless. But no, that's not fair. They're not great for having precise discussions as a designer, I think. I think Euro is a fine shorthand for... If someone says, I like to play Euros, you know what they mean, and that's good enough. But I don't think it's productive to say, to interrogate a game and say, is this game a Euro or not?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think we got on this because I was saying, like, I wanted to try and design some games in different categories, styles, right? So if I was going to say, I want to design a Euro today, what I'm kind of really saying is I want to try to design a heavy Euro that's got this longer, probably a bunch of more intricate systems that relies on, you know, some combination of engine building and worker placement or, you know.
Exactly.
But doesn't broach into 4X. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair. And everyone's going to disagree because of what I said.
Yeah.
Not even just with what I said, which is also true. Because of this language being divisive. And so, yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Like, just, it's just so interesting to me the way, like, people get so tied up in this stuff. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised when you look at things outside of game design. But it's just so ridiculous that we get so defensive of these definitions, like, of this is this type of game. Like, this is, I'm like,
Well, that goes back to the tribalism thing. Like, it's part of defining you as being part of the in crowd if you know the words. And if people aren't using the words the same way you're using the words, it's natural to get defensive about the language that is part of how you identify as a human. Like, this is part of who I am. This is my hobby, so I care about it, so I want you to respect it the way I respect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I get it. It's just like, I guess that people consider like certain, I think I would make the argument, correct me if I'm wrong, or maybe somebody already said this and I just missed it. But like, it's not about the fact that I identify myself as a Euro player. It's that I don't want to identify myself as somebody who plays X games. So, when you try to open up the definition of said game to include these other games, I am defensive because I don't want to be associated with that, right?
Yes. Whether it's because you feel like the game is that people don't like it and you want to be associated with something cooler, so you don't want to be associated with Monopoly, or mm-hmm. it's because you have some for good reason, some reservations about popular games like, say, Cards Against Humanity, that people might mm-hmm. like, you might bristle against that or whatever, you know, it's gonna be
right. But it's not like I'm like, Cards Against Humanity is a party game, so I don't want to be associated with party games, right? I mean, you could, you'd be super dumb if you were that way, because that doesn't make any sense. But like, yeah, and you know what I mean, right? Like, it's
yeah.
But if that was, I mean, yes, if party games, like they were for a while, it felt like, were all clones of Cards Against Humanity, I could see not wanting to be defined as that, right?
I mean, I think there's also, though, going back to something you said earlier, a marketing question, right? Because if you're going to describe your game in one way, and that's going to turn a bunch of people off because they think, right? So
that's a great
based
point.
On our definition, I could call Pirates a light Euro.
Yes.
Right? It's mm-hmm. worker placement. It's got a draft. It's got victory points. They are doubloons. Right?
Yeah.
It's a light Euro, right?
Yes.
Which I think we're calling now hobby games, right? But I don't think I would ever describe it as a Euro, because I think the people who picked it up because it was a Euro would be surprised or disappointed. And I think the number of people who didn't pick it up because they're like, sounds funny, but says it's a Euro. I don't got time for a Euro, right?
I think it is a correct, and would be a correct enough term, but I think the people who would know what the heck you mean when you say it's a light Euro are people who would know the more specific and useful terms like worker placement, which are more
right,
more likely to get across your point.
And for the ones that don't, hobby game is a great catch all to define it in a way that people won't get upset about.
Absolutely. Right. Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah. I think I would also have a, you know, as I think about if I was trying to design a Euro, like I think I'd have some like concerns about walking into a playtesting space and saying, this is my Euro game, and having people be like, no, it's not. It's not Euro enough, right? It feels safer to say it's a heavy strategy game, right? Rather mm-hmm. than to try and claim Euro, just because I think there'd be people who would fight me.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, somebody's got to say it. Women can't possibly design Euros.
I mean we only design party games. So I think, right. and Pirates, half, the next party game.
Half-assed at best, you know, with those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just you only design feminine party games, right?
Yeah, so. Yes, absolutely.
Listen, listeners, if you're not in our Discord and you're like, whoa, what's going on here? Just join our Discord. This is all in jest, and it's all based on very long conversations we've been fortunate to have around really stupid feedback from really stupid people. I'm just going to say it out loud. Really stupid people with really stupid feedback. Who were no one from our Discord, to be clear. So, yeah. So, anyways.
Yeah. Do we want to try and pitch something? Or are we... So, I think our plan here... I see Jonathan nodding his head. We'll do a real quick...
I'm fine with that. We won't technically run out of time on the internet. So, so there's that.
It's part of the podcast format. I think it's integral that we do a practice pitch.
I'm great with that. So,
all right.
Yeah.
So we're going to try and pitch a Euro game that we're going to come up with on the spot. Is that the,
I'm not, I will gladly facilitate, but I don't want to do that. I just want to listen.
Jason, you got
to
randomize us up some, something it has a game name or something.
You got a
name, a name generator or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, let me pull up a
ChatGPT, your buddy.
That's actually not a bad idea.
Write the rules for us. Yeah, we don't want to do that.
No, ask it for ask ChatGPT for the name of Euro games. Make up like 5 Euro name games.
Oh,
just
God.
Curious now.
They're all going to be European
Euro games
cities.
That no one would agree is a euro.
It's okay. Gonna be like, what?
What's it got for us?
Oh no. Oh no.
These are fantastic.
Okay.
Y'all can pick whatever one you want. Cash okay. Crop Crusaders, The Agrarian Adventure, Guilds and Goblins, Trading in the Dungeon, Meeple Mayhem, Corporate Takeover Edition, Suburbia Smackdown, Urban Planning Pandemonium, and Emily, you're going to like this one, Tea Time Titans, Colonial Conquest in 30 Minutes or Less.
Oh, no.
Sometimes it just knocks it out of the park, right?
Oh, no.
Was that all one? Tea Time Titans, Colonial Conquest yeah. in 30 Tea Minutes Time or Titans, Less?
Because it put it, whenever you subtitles. Ask ChatGPT to come up with a name, it will always give you a subtitle. Yeah, so.
Okay.
All right. Jonathan, do you want to take one first? Or?
Let's do one together.
Let's do one together. All right, which one do you want? I was drawn to Tea Time Titans or the Cash Crop one from the very beginning.
What was the full one of the Cash Crop one?
Cash Crop Crusaders, subtitle The Agrarian Adventure.
The Agrarian Adventure. I kind of like that because of the word adventure.
Yeah, yeah. What's Cash Crop, right?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, from the title, I think there's going to be multiple, right?
Yes.
So either each player has one or yeah. there are multiple ones you can pick from that have different attributes to them.
Yeah. I think it's not, I did have a moment where I went to, it should all be plants that are drugs, and maybe that's not the answer.
ChatGPT suggested that the cash crop should be space diamonds.
What?
Space diamonds.
I said, give me a cash crop that would not fit in a Euro game. And it said, space diamonds.
Okay, okay. Space all right, but let's roll with this. So yeah, we are colonizing outer space. We have to have an agrarian adventure in space. So we've got like pods where we're growing our stuff, right? So what's the cash crop in space? I don't know. I'm still on corn and tomatoes.
Oh, I thought it was space diamonds. That was the
space
point.
Diamonds?
Is space diamonds going to be the crop? Like, how is that?
Or is that what you earn? Yeah.
Yeah, you that earn be, space
that's
diamonds.
The currency. That's the currency. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. So I don't know. What's a crop that makes a lot of oxygen or something like that? Like, I feel like your cash crops would be ones that keep your ecosystem going, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So they could just be a any number of green things.
Yeah, we could be like Neptunian tulips and like Jupiter tomatoes. I'm really stuck on tomatoes.
Yes.
So
I like this. So what makes it an adventure is gonna adventure to me implies it really implies movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exploration or so maybe. So, yeah, going with your idea of the crops being like giving you air, maybe the agrarian adventure is in order to expand and search further, you need to have crops growing there so you can breathe.
Yeah. 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 So it's like you can like, so if we're on a planet, right, we can like basically like dune buggy our way between one set of crops to another. And it's like, how far can you build, like, we're kind of like longest roading
yeah.
your pods of your hex pods of crops or something like that.
And you've got to get back to the ones that you planted earlier and tend to them on some kind of schedule in order yes. for them to still be breathable, usable areas.
Yes. Yes. And in between your hex pods, there are different types of terrain that give you different challenges in your travel, right? So if you travel through like the rock monster pit versus like the boggy sand, right? So there's something about choosing where you're gonna put down your pod and which crops you're gonna put there.
Yes, so we need a mechanism for players to to get these things done. They're going to need to be able to move. They're going to need to be able to plant. They're going to need to be able to build all these things. Yep. I mean, it could be like a worker placement thing, but thematically that doesn't feel quite right.
Yeah. Action selection doesn't seem like it works. So we could do like a phases sort of thing, or like a, you know, you got four actions and each turn you have to take a different action than the one you took last turn.
Yeah. The scythe thing.
Yeah, the side thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep, that or like a simultaneous action selection if you got a hand of cards, like a Race for the Galaxy kind of thing where you got a card that says,
yeah,
drive the buggy or plant some space corn or whatever.
Absolutely. Love a simultaneous. Anything we can do can be simultaneous.
Yes.
All right, so we have some sort of simultaneous action selection type of thing that doesn't interfere with other players. We've got moving as an action. We have setting up a new pod. We have tending a pod.
And there's your indirect conflict is once I've set up a pod in a space, you can't.
Yep.
Nice.
We probably have some sort of harvesting to get space diamonds. And so then I feel like we need another type of thing that you can build, which is some sort of facility for processing, or that lets you like up your, you know, double down on Neptunian tulips to turn it into, you know, cold hard space diamonds.
Yeah, there could be cards representing those facilities that we get through some mechanism, a draft or a market of some kind.
Yeah.
To give some texture to the game. Like you might not always have exactly the same kinds of upgrades available.
Yeah. There could be like a supply ship that comes in and says, here are the new upgrades that we've brought available. And, you know, claiming upgrades is a thing, but once they're gone from that supply ship, you have to wait until the next supply ship comes in.
Love it. Yeah. So the supply ship, That could be, those cards could be a mixture of upgrades you can get and opportunities for selling your stuff to the people who just came in to get the space diamonds.
Yes, there we go.
So you have to decide, maybe we're taking turns taking a card from this pile and you have to decide, am I getting an upgrade or am I making money?
Yep. Yeah. And I'm gonna say it, but I don't like it. There could be a market where if I sell my tulips first, then your tulips are worth less, or some sort of like filling, like again, Puerto Rico. Clearly, Puerto Rico is one of my touch point Euro games. but you know, filling the hold, right? Of like, there's only so much room. So once I've sold, you know, a bunch of this stuff, there's not as much room for you to sell it, or something like that. I don't want to go full market where the prices vary, but maybe there's a limited space constraint or something like that.
Well, we could abstract that with the card thing. So if a card says sell 5 space barley for 12 space diamonds, and there are just some of these cards with random different things on them, it's first come, first serve. That kind of does the same thing as the market without having to manipulate a market.
Yeah.
It's opportunity cost, right?
Yeah. And so I think we could play this over, you know, some number of seasons, right? We can do 4 seasons, or we could be like, you know, on Mars, there's 5 seasons because it's Mars, right?
Because Mars is a pentagon.
And then somebody's going to be like, well, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, you play it over some number of space time, right? And most space diamonds wins.
Agreed.
Done.
This is beautiful. We're done.
Ship it. Find me a publisher to pitch it to.
Oh, wait, that's you.
Tighten it up and it'll be great. Oh, yeah, right. Coming soon from Bing Bong Games. What was it called? An Agrarian Adventure?
Yeah.
Cash crops?
Cash cropping.
Crusaders. Yeah, you're going to have to figure it out.
I don't like the Crusader.
Oh, shoot. We forgot Crusaders.
Oh. That would be the first thing to go. No.
Yeah.
The word crusade in any way is not going to be on this game.
It's still better than It's still better than Tea Time Titans Colonial Conquest in 30 minutes or less. That actually sounds like a pitch for a game from like the mid-90s, early 2000s.
Absolutely.
Like, I feel like that is...
Yes.
Yeah. Well, because Colonial... I mean, I played a game at PAX East that I was like, wow, this is like super colonialism, and I'm shocked. And I looked at it, it was from like 2015, right? And I was like, oh, I guess we've come a long ways here, or a ways, some ways.
Yeah.
Right?
The sad thing was that in 2015, that was still not, like, that was still frowned upon.
Yeah.
It just wasn't frowned upon enough for people to be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's not gone yet, but
yeah,
we're making progress.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can see it.
Whew. This was a good journey, y'all. A journey.
Amazing.
I want to do this ChatGPT name thing again. That was fun.
Yeah, that was actually really great. More things ChatGPT is good at,
yeah,
other than writing stuff for you that is stealing from other people.
Excellent.
I mean, all you're putting out of business with that is other randomizers that were just not ChatGPT. They were literally like, here's a list. That's the thing, is like the other ones were literally here, like, here's a list of words, match them up randomly.
Yeah.
So this is so much more fun because it's really putting thought into it.
Yep.
Well, thank you, y'all, for doing this. I definitely want to do this again and argue points about some other definition, because this is super fun, and I am confident that people will be both completely in line with the thoughts of this episode and completely against them, and I'm
Riled
here for
up.
It. I'm like, I just want to point out that if you're listening to this episode and you're going to pop in the Discord and be riled up, go for it. But second of all, you are proving the points that were made on this episode. Being riled up about this only makes our case stronger. Like, it's like, yes, let the hate flow through you. Feel it. you strike us down, we'll become more powerful. So anyways, yeah. But no, this is a good discussion. I appreciate you both being willing to have it. This was a lot of fun. Yeah. Anytime we can have Jonathan come on and talk at length about some weird thing like this makes me happy. And yeah. And Emily and I, we were here too. So
yeah, yeah. This is the thing that happened.
So no, this was fantastic. I appreciate all the thoughts you had too, Emily. So yeah. So how do people get in touch with either of you? Obviously, for Jonathan, for you, they should go to Kickstarter and search Bouba space KIKI.
That's right.
Or just Grand Gamers Guild will do it too.
Yep, so. Or go to thechaffers.com/news. You can sign up for my newsletter or my Discord, where I post free puzzles all the time.
Is your name on the box of this?
If my name will be on the box. So it's
so
a hero.
It's a
game.
Hero. Yeah. I like that you knew where I was going as soon as I asked the question. Yep, definitely a euro. It's also family friendly, for the record. So unless
it plays in under 60 minutes.
Yeah, under 60 yeah. minutes.
It has a distinct lack of colonialism for the best, but also hurts its, you know, status.
Has wooden components. I guess you could say it's got victory points, sort of.
Done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You do know how to design the best euro.
It has pictures just like Dixit, so Dixit is, as we know, the quintessential Euro game.
It is. I want to throw out here that I was typing random title generator, and then Emily said, use ChatGPT, which I just always have open on a different tab. So I stopped typing and didn't hit enter, which I'm thankful for, because where I stopped typing random title generator, I will say is three letters into the second word.
I thought that might be where you're going.
So this is where, like,
is this just where a button that you have that you can click?
Oh, it's out.
Yeah. So what I'm thinking is, how funny it would have been if anyone else in my house had walked down here and saw that and been like, you know what? Here's the thing, though. at least for my wife, she would have looked at the first suggestion and been like, random title generator. I guarantee that's what he was searching. Yeah. It's like, you know, I wonder what he's thinking about right now. Yep. Random board game titles. That is probably the thing. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Okay. So I'm at pinkhawkgames.com. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can join the Discord. You can also find me on Discord as Emily Keeps Kitties. And you might see me on Blue Sky under the same, or Instagram, Pinkhawk Games.
Awesome. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, of course, there's buildinggamepodcast.com. There you find a link to our sweet, sweet Discord where you can come, tell us that we're wrong. Or you could just come and have a cool conversation. Be cooler if you did. So anyways, you can also email us, buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com, whatever. You won't, that's fine. But until next time. Oh, you can come back every single week. But until next time, good night.
Good night.
Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. The end of the episode, that's
when it technically ends.